Wednesdays of every Wednesday of the month, we try to promote some things relating to the outdoors and to the environment. And certainly energy has been a popular topic and one that we've tried to feature over time on Wednesday programs. And that's why one of the reasons I'm happy to have Ingrid Kelly with us, author of Energy in America, A Tour of the Fossil Fuel Culture and Beyond. It's published by the University of Vermont Press. Ingrid is a project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, serves as chair of the Environment, Natural Resource and Resources and Energy Division of the American Planning Association. And we're really pleased to have her with us today to talk about her book and to talk about how you and I can make some choices, informed choices about our energy future. Certainly, if you have questions or comments as we move along, and I hope you do, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@wpr.org. Appreciate hearing from you and really appreciate having Ingrid Kelly with us. Ingrid, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Larry. I appreciate being here.
You have promoted renewable energy, energy efficiency, sustainable community design for, gosh, what, 20 years or so, haven't you?
Yeah, that's about it.
What led you to write this book, and the book, again, Energy in America?
Well, over the years, I've talked with a lot of people who are involved in sustainable community design, and this is certainly becoming a subject that many communities in Wisconsin and elsewhere are getting concerned about. And I've realized from the questions they ask me that they really need a better grasp of how our energy industry works and how it came about in order to be prepared to help move us to a clean energy future. So essentially, I wrote this book to give my audience, who are these people interested mm-hmm. in sustainable issues, I wanted to give them the background they need to be energy literate, because if we don't understand what we have or where it came from, then it will have great difficulty making any meaningful changes for
yeah,
the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is really a book for somebody like me or anybody who's not an expert in the field. It's for community folks who are interested in this area.
Right. And that it seems like a rather like a niche market, but it includes a broad cross-section. I know that there are architects and engineers and building professionals who would be interested in this, as well as local officials, municipal officials, mayors and city council people, and environmental activists, a lot of groups who are involved in those issues, and also just people who hear the news about climate change and so forth, and they want to know a little bit more about the whole picture.
You know, some, I think when we think about energy and sustainable energy, a lot of times we think in terms of, well, what are we going to do on a national basis? What are the federal, what are we going to do at the federal level? You're talking here, though, more about communities and at a lower level, and you're talking about sustainable community design. What does that really mean? How does a community become, design itself to become sustainable?
Well, I think that we need to realize that energy is woven into everything in our daily lives, and many of the issues that people get involved with in the environmental movement are directly related, and even people-oriented sustainability issues like food systems and environmental justice and economic issues are all connected to energy. And this, it's sort of like saying, well, global warming, that's global, but climate change, that's going to be a really local thing. We're going to be dealing with that on a local basis. And so preparing ourselves at the local level on an everyday basis is really where communities come in and where planning can be done that really affects people on an everyday basis.
Yeah. Ingrid Kelly, our guest, as we talk with her about our choices, about our energy future, and about her book, Energy in America. Questions or comments, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. As you think about it, the United States produces about, over 20% of the world's carbon dioxide emissions. So we're the biggest polluters in that area, I think, of any country, are we not?
Yes, that's true. And I think that this is because we've kind of built our whole culture on fossil fuels, which I think people need to understand a little bit more about that. And that's why the first chapter in my book covers fossil fuels, because coal and oil and natural gas are what built America, basically.
Sure.
It's what created our industries and our leadership position in the world, very, very heavily based on fossil fuels. And for that reason, the political structure has supported the fossil fuel industries for many years. It would follow, the logic would follow that would be the case.
And so we have to make some changes.
Yes, and that's not going to be easy because we've come to use a lot of energy. Because fossil fuels we've gotten really good at using them, mining them and pumping them out of the ground, and finding many, many ways to use them, from transportation fuels and heating fuels to generating electricity and making chemicals and plastics. All of these things come from the fossil fuel industries.
Yeah. Well, Jane in Harshaw has a question or comment. Jane, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for putting me on.
Sure.
I guess two things, and I'll try to be brief on this. First of all, we moved up here a couple of years ago into the Northwoods area with the intention of using every alternative energy source we could and building as efficiently as possible. And it's a sad story because we could not find the resources, we couldn't find the direction, we couldn't even find an architect that would help us design energy efficiently. And we ended up having one by one to give up on everything. We started with geothermal, backed off on that. The bottom line is that we couldn't find, and we're deeply wooded here in the Northwoods, so solar wasn't an alternative for our site. And we just had to back off from everything, and we're building a factory-built home at this point because we, with an average income, couldn't afford to build anything that was going to be clean and alternative and within our budget. So that's one question. The other thing is that there's a lot of consensus building that needs to be done up in the Northwoods area because people really want to do what they want to do. And, for instance, burning and those outdoor wood-burning boilers, it's become a really hot issue up here. People don't want them to be regulated, and yet they put a lot of particulate matter into the air. So those are my two comments.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, and we'll get Ingrid to comment on your comments. Go ahead, Ingrid. Let's take, either one. Which one do you want to go with first?
Well, first of all, I want to say that we're really in the beginning of developing these things, and you are, in a way, a pioneer. You went in ahead of the crowd here to try to do something yourself, and I commend you for that. It's very difficult at this point, although even now, it's easier now than it was, say, even 5 years ago, to find information and resources. As far as I just wanted to make sort of a general comment about the northern part of the state. You're right about solar being a bit of a challenge when you have a lot of trees. Obviously, you can't be shading the panels or they're not going to do their job. But in the north, the biggest resource is probably a biomass or wood. And you talked about those, the outdoor boilers. Yes, those are a problem. Their biggest advantage is that they're cheap, and that means that you don't invest a lot of money to build one of those. But of course, we all pay the environmental price of people using those, and I think that as technology improves, and it is improving dramatically, people will realize, and there will be more. equipment available that will meet EPA standards for emissions. I'm wanting to ask you if you looked into pellet stoves for heating your house.
Oh, we lost her. So. Oh,
okay. Well, there are some very efficient pellet stoves on the market, and they are a little pricey, but if you have a good wood resource on your property, which many people do in the North, you can get a payback on that fairly quickly by harvesting off of your own land. I also know that the whole biomass question in the northern part of the state is starting to center on ecological management of forest land, and that there are going to be a lot more resources available soon for people interested in that as well.
All right. Thank you again, Jane, for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 with your question. Josh in Superior is up next, so let's go there. Josh, hello to you.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment after hearing about the wood stoves, outdoor wood boilers. There is one that will be meeting, if not already, it will be meeting the EPA standards for emissions. It's built up in Winnipeg by a company called Empire, and I just thought I'd mention that.
Okay, so Empire is building a wood stove that will meet, an outdoor boiler?
Yes.
That'll meet that, and Ingrid, you probably didn't know about. You may or may
not.
No,
technology follows demand. I think we need to remember that. What's not possible today will probably be possible as people demand that it become available. And you just made a very good point by mentioning that technology, something that will be available to people. That will meet the requirements. So that's good to know.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And that company was Empire for the other person. Dave in Richland Center, on to you. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I just had a question regarding the pellets, how you would get pellets. If you have a good wood stand on your property, how you would get the pellets out of the wood stand. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I tell you what, we're going to let Ingrid ponder that for a second. Ingrid Kelly, who is the author of the book Energy in America, A Tour of Our Fossil Fuel Culture and Beyond, with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about choices about our energy future today with Ingrid Kelly, author of the book Energy in America, A Tour of Our Fossil Fuel Culture and Beyond. She has a great background, project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, chairs the Environment, Natural Resources, and Energy Division of the American Planning Association. So she brings a lot of background to this discussion. And the book is written for people, for a broad range of people, and certainly anybody who's interested in our energy future. Sustainable community design is going to get a lot out of this book. You can call us with your questions at 800-642-1234 and email us at talk@wpr.org. Ingrid, before we get back to the phones, tell us a bit more, tell our listeners a bit more about how you've got the book organized. You mentioned that in Chapter 1 you do talk about fossil fuels like coal and oil and so forth, but then you go beyond that as well in later chapters.
Yes, I decided to organize it somewhat chronologically, but to start with background information, kind of history, and then move into action and direction that we're going for the future. So I did start with fossil fuels, which mm-hmm. lays the basis. But then the second chapter is about the electricity industry, mm-hmm. which caused tremendous social changes in our country. And then when the 70s came along, the country woke to conservation and efficiency and the whole idea that maybe there were some limits to what we could use. And that was a big social shock. Then I have a whole chapter on renewable energy, and I look at all the different technologies, how they developed, where they came from, and a little bit about where they potentially might be going. And then I include a special chapter that uses the American Planning Association's Growing Smart legislative guidebook on, it's a kind of a template for smart growth planning for communities. Mm-hmm. And I look at ways that energy issues, strategies, clean energy ideas can be inserted into a community's comprehensive plan, or some communities actually have sustainable development plans that goes beyond land use.
Yes.
So that chapter looks at that aspect. And then the last chapter looks at energy policy at the state and federal level, some of the things that are being done by the legislatures, different kinds of declarations and commitments to clean energy future, that sort of thing.
Task forces and so forth.
Right, yeah.
And Ralph in Door County is online and I think has a comment relating to a task force. Ralph, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. Sounds like a great book. I can't wait to read it. I'm calling in. I was driving in my car, of course, listening to the interview with the lady from the Northwoods. And Door County kind of qualifies as the Northwoods. And up here in our little county, we've established through the Door County Environmental Council what we call our Renewable Energy Task Force. I'm calling to offer it as a resource to that listener and anybody else who wants to. We've been operating for 3 years now. Our objective is to promote renewables in the residences and businesses and governments here in Door County. We've got a directory of people who provide those services, and we take active participation in the National Solar Home Tour, et cetera. So I thought I'd call with that resource for you.
Excellent. And do you have a website?
You betcha. Anybody, easy one, renewabledoorcounty.com.
renewabledoorcounty.com.
Right. And that has all the contact information. You can download a copy of our, a PDF copy of our directory. You can listen to podcasts of a monthly radio show we do up here called Energy Matters. And gather all sorts of information on what you can do to start with an existing facility, or if you're building from the ground up, get some really good information on the various renewable techniques you can employ to make your new home as earth-friendly as possible.
Well, I thank you very much for calling, Ralph. And Ingrid, a comment from you.
Well, I want to thank you, Ralph. That's great. I made a note of it, and I'm going to check out your website when I get back to work.
I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And there are, our earlier caller mentioned that, she was having problems finding ways to make their new home energy friendly. But so there's organizations like this Renewable Energy Task Force out there, but there's also statewide organizations like Focus on Energy, Ingrid, that can be helpful.
Yes, the Focus on Energy program has a wonderful website. And even though you are only eligible for financial incentives if your utility is part of the program, and you should check to make sure, all investor-owned utilities, the big ones, are members of Focus on Energy, and many cooperatives and municipals are also. So if you go on the website, which is focusonenergy.com.
Yep, it's an easy one.
Yeah. And there's a little, I think there's a little thing there that where you can figure out if your utility is a member. But even if it isn't, there's a tremendous amount of information available on that website, and it's all focused on Wisconsin, on resources in Wisconsin, on things that are possible to do in Wisconsin. So it's not just getting in touch with the federal government or something. It's a local resource.
It is at that. And Ralph, again, thanks for calling. I want to give Bill and Viola a chance to join in. Bill, hello to you.
Hi. They call me the windmill man up here.
Oh.
I've got two little Arizona wind and solar, wind power, H40 windmills that generate part of my electricity. Then I got a diesel generator I use for backup. I've got a 8-foot by 40-foot attached greenhouse that faces south, and that right now it's heating the whole house. just the heat flowing out of there. Plus, I got three patio doors on the upper level facing south, and they go open drapes up, and that'll heat the whole house. And it's right, I'm sitting here about 70, 75 degrees right now, and it's 6 degrees outside, and I'm off grid. Unfortunately, the co-op up here won't allow me to connect to the grid and feed back my surplus power, so I decided to go it alone and stay off grid. But I sympathize with women. Finding the information to do this is time-consuming. But there are an enormous amount of alternative energy sites that you can look this stuff up.
Yeah.
But it's a struggle.
Yeah, it can be a struggle. Ingrid, comment from you.
Well, first of all, I think it's really great that you're proving that passive solar works in Wisconsin, because people have disagreed with me on that point. And I also want to say that you're another pioneer. It's going to take us a while to get off the ground on this, and we need people like you not only doing it but talking about it. So I hope your home is on the solar tour.
No, it's not.
Well, you should get in touch with the Midwest Renewable Energy Association in Custer, and they have a website, which I believe is the... underline, not a hyphen.
Dash, could be.
Well, Google them.
If you just go to Midwest Renewable Energy Association.
Yeah, and you can find out about the solar tour and how you can get your home on it, because I think that sounds like a great place. I'd love to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a work in progress. I'm 74 years old, and I started this when I was 67. So,
so you've been doing it.
I kind of didn't realize how hard building a house was when you start getting old.
Well, good for you, Bill. And take a look at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association. Mike Vickerman and crew do a wonderful job there. Teresa in Hartford is up next. Teresa, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
This is more of a comment, I guess, and it kind of piggybacks with the windmill man who was just before. But I just wanted to say that, you know, it is expensive to do things the environmental way sometimes when you're looking to build new. However, if you're doing things like recycling. My husband and I just recently made a solar panel that's working, and a rain barrel. We have rain barrels around our house and a compost pile that we do ourselves, and it doesn't have to be real expensive. You just have to be resourceful. And one of our greatest resources actually has been YouTube, which is surprising, but people will post videos of themselves making these things from recycled products, and they work. So that was just my comment.
All right. Thanks for calling. Ingrid, comment?
Well, I find it endlessly fascinating at what people are doing. All the resources, you say you find people on YouTube, that is really great. People are trying a lot of stuff, and you start looking around, you're going to find a lot of ideas for yourself.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Teresa. Good for you. Dan in Delafield, on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Yes, hi. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Right. I just wanted to share my experience living in a city in Sweden, where I live there about 6 months of the year, and then I'm here in Wisconsin. I teach at a seminary, mostly in the fall and early winter. So I'm always making comparisons, and because I teach ethics, I've been interested in environmental issues for a number of years, and I notice in Sweden they're far ahead in many of these energy-saving options, especially for community design. Specifically, I wanted just to mention that our house in Sweden is heated by what they call fjärrvärme. It's a distance heating system where the city has one central furnace, and they're able to control it and make it environmentally friendly, and then they pump the heat to individual houses. And they've had to dig up the streets installing sewer lines. But these are heating lines, and it's supposedly making our city there one of the greenest cities in Europe. At least that's the claim. I just wondered if you had encountered this and would comment on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are talking about what's called district heating, which in this country has been primarily used at large institutions. As a matter of fact, a number of the state buildings, municipal buildings downtown in Madison, are heated by a central system. And there are, it occurs on, for large hospitals or universities or city systems. More municipalities are starting to look into this. It's something that certainly can work just as well with residential areas, but it's not something that has been happening in this country. But I think that it's going to start. And one reason is not only is it more efficient to do this to a central system, but they can also use biomass combustion for the heating source, such as the urban forestry waste, which is all of the the trees that get cut down in the city and cleared away. This is a tremendous resource. I believe in St. Paul they have a system where they use the local tree waste from the urban forestry program to generate electricity and heat. This is a combined heat and power, which is another version of the same thing. But yes, this is definitely something we need to import from Europe.
And I thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And I want to go back because I neglected, and we've had some people calling saying, Larry, don't forget about the pellets. Because there was a question earlier, a man called in to ask how you made wood pellets from your woodlot, or if you did, and how to go about that, or what needed to be done to do it. And I neglected to follow up with you on that. Ingrid, do you know anything about that?
Well, pellets. I've never heard of someone making pellets from their own.
Okay.
Wood. It's you can get them from companies that make pellets. The more that demand goes up for them, the more likely pellet manufacturing facilities will start to appear, making it a more economical choice. So using wood off your own woodlot, you'd have to have a wood-burning stove that used regular firewood.
Okay. So you can't just go out and make your own pellets, unfortunately. But maybe that'll happen someday. You never know what's going to happen.
That's right.
You never know. Mike in Seneca is up next. Mike, hello to you.
Hello, Larry. The lady talked about some things from her book, and a couple people called in, and I did a study on major manufacturers of wood stoves and furnaces, and I thought I would inject these gaps, fill them in for you. One was the pellet issue.
Yeah.
Okay, the pellet stoves will burn either corn or wood pellets. It's very expensive to have a factory to make these pellets. So what you do is you buy them by the pallet load, and there's so much it boils down to so much a bag, and it's just comparable to any other fuel you burn. But the high point of the pellet stove is that basically, it's very similar to burning gas. There's just water vapor, and it's you can run a pipe right out the side of your wall, following the codes, of course. And it's very user friendly. It's easy to maintain, and they're very decorative. Just go to any stove place in town; they usually carry them. The other thing was the products of combustion that pollute on these outdoor wood furnaces.
Yeah.
For example, Vermont Castings has had a retrofitted device for years that goes in the stack coming out of the furnace. This technology has been around, but the manufacturers just haven't been using it. So there's a series of these, they're like donuts. Well, better yet, a catalytic converter on an automobile is basically what it does. Mm-hmm. It gets to a high temperature, burns up the hydrocarbons, but you have to maintain a high heat to do it, and maybe that's part of the problem. But these have been available. One place I think that has them available is Chimney Specialists out of southern Wisconsin. I don't know the address right offhand. They are actually a supplier to dealers and chimney sweeps, but I think I've seen them in their catalog.
Hmm. All right. So there's some answers. Ingrid, any comment?
Well, I would like to add that was very good information. I would just like to add that one of the reasons that these outdoor boilers are a problem is that you're heating water. There's a water jacket,
yeah,
or something that contains the water that's around the fire. And unfortunately, that being there means that the fire never gets hot enough to burn off all of the products. It's not as efficient as with the pellets. Almost everything gets burned. You have practically no ash. But with these boilers, it doesn't burn as much of the wood. And so it's the particulate matter that gets into the air and is such a pollution problem.
All right. Mike, thank you very much. And I want to go to Chet in Arkdale, who's got some updated information for us as well, I believe. Chet, hello.
Hello. I just wanted to let you know I've been in the heating field for about 30 years, and we went to MREA this past summer and met up with some people who were selling pelletizers. And you can buy your own pelletizer and make your own pellets.
You can?
Yes. And we actually took our horse manure and had it pelletized and analyzed, and it burns hotter than oak.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So the pelletizer was at the, and we were at the MREA, and I don't remember seeing it, but, you know, there's a lot at the MREA.
Yes.
Jim Packard and I wandered around quite a bit, but didn't see it all. So anybody can buy a wood pelletizer then?
Yeah, it runs about $5,000, and I've investigated doing that. There's certain drawbacks to it, but it's too much for me to get into right now. But I could call back again some other time. I have a lot of information. I think you should get with a pelletizing-type stove that's an indoor unit and then make like a Russian stove type out of it,
mm-hmm,
and then put a couple of electric hot water heaters up above it with the casing off, and then you allow the heat from that stove to heat the water and then run that to your different buildings and your hot water.
So there's ways to do it, Ingrid.
Yes, I'm glad to hear about the pelletizer. And the first thing I thought of was... the American West was built on buffalo chips, so there you go.
There you go. And I guess we've gotten some calls from folks who said you can see those pelletizers on YouTube. If you go to YouTube, there are some videos online of those pelletizers in action. So there you have it. Chet, thank you very much for calling. And Greg in Watertown, give you a chance. Greg, hello.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Ingrid. Larry, thanks for another great show. So much good information being distributed through Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
I'd like to add my 2 cents worth to the conversation. When we burn biomass off of farms, I think one of the best ways to do it is through gasification. If the biomass you have is in a dry enough form that you don't have to use energy to drive the water off, then gasification does a really good job of converting the biomass into both energy and heat. And the reason for that is that when you gasify something, you're creating syngas or producer gas or wood gas, and that's hydrogen and carbon monoxide with the background atmospheric gas of nitrogen, and it has like 118 octane rating. It's a wonderful heat engine fuel. You can burn this stuff in an internal combustion engine, which is easy, or a turbine, or an external combustion engine, a steam engine. And then when you're using your biomass, you get not only heat from your biomass, but you can get your energy source. You can then turn a generator and feed back into the grid if you're willing to pay for the costs of pure sine wave inverters and the other paraphernalia necessary to protect the line and linemen, et cetera.
You know, I'm going to have to break in because we're just about out of time. Ingrid, do you want to make comment?
Well, just a quick one, that this area of developing gasifying biomass is a really hot research area right now, and I know we're going to be seeing a lot of great developments in the near future.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about that, and there's some significant dollars research dollars going into that as well. Ingrid, it's been a real pleasure. Again, I want to let everybody know your book is titled Energy in America, and the subtitle, A Tour of Our Fossil Fuel Culture and Beyond. And it's published by University of Vermont Press, if I'm not mistaken. University of Vermont Press, and should be available.
It's available on Amazon.
Yeah, or any of your local bookstores. Go to your local bookstore, and if they don't have it, they can get it for you as well. Ingrid, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Ingrid Kelly, author of Energy in America, A Tour of Our Fossil Fuel Culture and Beyond, our guest today. It's a pleasure to have her with us, and I appreciate it very much. And we can certainly be talking about this issue as time goes on. But just to let you know, tomorrow, New Year's Day, I'll be here and we'll talk bird watching. Noel Cutright of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, Bill Volkert of the DNR, our guests.